from Anshe Sfar Bethel Emeth Congregation, it's time to take 10 Minutes for Torah with Rabbi Joel Finkelstein.
Welcome to our discussion of Jewish life in the Kovno Ghetto. In the Kovno Ghetto, there are a number of rabbis. Eventually, this Rabbi Ephraim Oshry, who later was a rabbi in Lower East Side of Manhattan, he became in charge of many of the halachic, legal, Jewish legal questions that arose for Jews trying to keep the punctilious details of Jewish law, even under the conditions of a Nazi ghetto, where Jews have been put in a ghetto in Kovno in the years of the Holocaust. He wrote a series of books, five books, Shelot Utshuvot Mima Amakim, responsa from the depths of human experience. He wrote these responsa. How the rabbi was able to muster up all these different sources and resources during the ghetto. He was in charge of the collection of books that the Nazis had put together, a collection of books that he was in charge of. I guess they were saving it for the Museum of Judaism or what. And he was able to use his great memory and scholarship, and also some of the local books as well. Let's take a look at some of the questions that he had. Each question reminds us of the great tragic situation which befell the Jewish people in Lithuania and Kovno and in other ghettos, no doubt, as well. Purim. We know that the Jews had a daily soup, which is a ration, in the ghetto. So if someone on Purim, all they ate was the soup, would that count as a Seudas Purim? Would it count as their Seuda, their just festive meal they're supposed to have on Purim, or not? And surely bread is not necessarily a requirement, and somehow it's fulfilled that. Some people witnessed the ripping of a Torah by the Nazis. Yimach Shema, may their memory be blotted out. When you see a Torah that's burnt, you have to fast. But what about if it's ripped? So he said, well, those who saw it should fast, but of course they can't fast. But ideally you should rip your clothes when you see something like that, but that's only when it's burnt, not when it's simply ripped. What do you do when some people are killed in the ghetto, they died, and now their clothes are a commodity? Can you take their clothes? If somebody has a good pair of shoes, you don't have shoes, you're freezing. If their clothes were on them before they died, no, but if they took off their clothes so they could shoot them. So since the clothes were taken off before they were killed and martyred, you could take their clothes. There was someone who was in charge of cooking that horrible black soup that they made. Could you cook it on Shabbos? If his job was to cook it on Shabbos, says, yeah, you could cook it because otherwise people will die. You have to cook that soup. You have no choice. There's a blessing we make when you're saved from great troubles. Birkata gomel. Fly overseas, or you go through a desert, or you get out of jail. Dangerous situations. You have to say this bracha. So there were certain actions, there were certain transports of the children, where the children were taken out of the ghetto and they went off to wherever they went to be cremated, to be killed. So those who were saved felt very thankful to God that they were saved. They felt mournful about those who were lost, but they felt thankful about being saved, that they that weren't transported. Could they say Birkat HaGomel, this blessing? And he said no, because they're still in danger. So they couldn't make the blessing until they were fully saved. A boy came over to him. He was studying with him, the wonderful boy. He was interested in learning in Torah. But he says, you know, I don't know if I'll make it to my bar mitzvah. Could I put on tefillin now? I know usually don't put on tefillin until the bar mitzvah. Could I put on the tefillin now? And the rabbi allowed him to wear the tefillin before the bar mitzvah. After all, according to Talmudic law, it can be worn as long as you're Yodel Lishmor tefillah, as long as you know how to guard them with the honor. He let him wear those tefillin. In the ghetto, they would shove a bunch of families into an old, broken-down apartment and stick them in there. Do you have to have a mezuzah on your door? He said, if you could, it would be good, but they're forced to live there. Do you have to have a mezuzah on a place where you're forced to live? Well, what about a jail? Would a person have have to have a mezuzah. Rambam says, yes, you need it. But he said, if you have a mezuzah, it's wonderful, but put it on without a blessing, because it's not clear that it's really a permanent dwelling. Maybe it's just temporary. You're not supposed to eat in front of someone who's dead. What if you wake up in the morning and someone in your apartment is dead? They can't bury them till later. And you have to eat a little bit of breakfast from your rations before you go off to the horrible work. Can you eat in front of the dead? You can put up a machitza, a little wall. That's good. But if you can't, he allowed them to eat. And even though in general, we don't eat in front of someone who's dead. You're not supposed to teach Talmud and things to Gentiles unless it's, Rabbi Soloveitchik said, unless it's for the honor and glory of the Jews. But the Nazis asked him, they want to know certain things that are in these Jewish books. And they asked this rabbi and other rabbis to teach them. He names the different rabbis. Yes, he says you could teach them these books if you have to. Generally, the rabbi said yes to almost every question because it's a matter of life and death. There's one question he said no. Could you get a certificate that says, I converted to Christianity? He says, no, that you can't do. You can't take on another religion even to save your life. And who says it'll save your life anyway, sitting there in the ghetto? Who says you can escape with this rouge? At a certain point, the children were taken away. They wanted to say Kaddish for the children. Should you say Kaddish for children or not? He says, yes, if they're more than 30 days old, then you should say Kaddish over the children. Do you say Kaddish for martyrs? It was an opinion that they don't need Kaddish there. They'll go to the special department in Gan Eden in the Garden of Eden. You don't need to. But he said, no, they should say Kaddish. And in fact, he says they all said Kaddish together. They had some chametz. They wanted to get rid of it during Pesach, but they had to hoard the food. I mean, they couldn't throw away the bread, so they hoarded a little bit of food. They tried, they were mevatel it. They said they annulled the chametz, but they could. And then after Pesach, they want to eat the bread. Are you allowed to eat bread that was Passover, passed over it? Generally not. It's totally forbidden. You can't even benefit from it. But what were they supposed to do? How are they supposed to sell it to a Gentile? Who's, were they going to sell it to the Nazis? The Nazis, if they found out they had the extra food, they would kill them. Who knows what would happen? So he said, really, you wanted to annul it. Really, you try to get rid of it, but you were forced to keep it. So really, it's not yours. You could eat it after. It's a horrible question. People, there were still husbands and wives who were there. Could they have relations together? But then she might become pregnant. They'll kill her for being pregnant. So that could they use certain types of birth control that were not usually used? Could someone perform an abortion so they wouldn't be pregnant, so they wouldn't be killed? He said yes. Jews don't shave their beards with razors. Electric razors we use, but regular razor we don't use. But the Nazis didn't allow beards. This particular rabbi, he was allowed to. To keep his beard, generally, they cut them off. They embarrass the rabbis. You'll get beaten up if you have a beard. Could they use a razor? He says, if you can find the Nazi barber who would, you know, cut your hair and you don't move, that would be better. But if not, then he allowed people to use a razor to save their lives. They had a chauffeur that was not really a good chauffeur. It was a little bit cracked. Usually it's not considered kosher. Told him to blow the chauffeur anyway. Someone would put, they put a tattoo of a cross on his arm and he didn't want to put his tefillin on top of the cross, so he wanted to put a band-aid there. Could he still put on his tefillin? And the rabbi told him to make two blessings over the head tefillin so he could at least fulfill the mitzvah. Someone died and they wanted to do the ritual purification. Usually you do it closer to the funeral. They needed to do it right away. Maybe the Nazis wouldn't let them do it later. Could they do it earlier? And he told them it's okay, you can do it later. One fellow was a Kohen. He was beaten up so badly that he lost certain private parts, and that made him perhaps disqualified for being a Kohen for certain things. Does that mean if they had a little shul there, could he get an aliyah as the Kohen or not? And he said, yes, he could still have the aliyah as a Kohen after quoting many different sources. Every single question I'm mentioning, he quotes reams and reams of sources and Talmud and the medieval sources and all kinds of sources. And he said, yes, you could. And this Kohen said, oh, Rabbi, I was feeling so bad. I wouldn't be able to be called for a Kohen. I'd be so embarrassed. Why am I not a Kohen? And because of my personal problem, Rabbi Nichamtani, Echitani. He said, Rabbi, You comforted me. You brought me back. You brought me back to life. Thank you for what you said. Of course, the answer to most questions in the ghetto was, you can do it because you want to save your life. But the rabbi mustered up all the different sources he had in his brain and his books, and was able to give Jews comfort that even though they were in this situation, the rabbi said it was okay. And he said it was okay because of this and because of that and because of this source and the other source. And therefore they felt better. But look at this, it's unbelievable. In these conditions, where they had every right to be enraged with life, with God, with everything, Judaism. Instead, Jews were trying to keep every detail of Jewish law, from tefillin to blessings to Torah reading to whether they should fast. A Jew who's starving is asking whether he should fast. It's unbelievable what they were trying to do, to say Kaddish, to not eat chametz on Pesach. There was a Jew who usually he tried to be very strict. He wouldn't eat matzah balls because the matzah is mixed with water and maybe there's some flour there. He's worried. So usually he wouldn't eat matzah balls. But they knocked out his teeth. He had no teeth. So now he needed to eat soaked matzah. Could he eat the soaked matzah? He's trying to keep every punctilious detail of Jewish law. These are the Jews. This is the Jewish people. This is the resilience they had then and they have now. A friend of mine, Rabbi Yisrael Moshe Sif, was privileged to know Rabbi Oshri. He would visit him in his apartment in the Lower East Side. And the rabbi would say, don't remember how the Jews died. Remember how they lived. This is how they lived, even in the Kovno ghetto. They lived with piety. They lived remembering the mitzvos. And no matter what happened, they continued to be devoted servants of God. Thank you for joining us here, our discussion of the Jews of the Kovno ghetto, apropos to as we approach the Yom HaShoah, the Day of Holocaust Remembrance this year. And let the memories of those who perished at the hands of the Nazis, their name be blotted out, Yimach Shemam. Let their names of those who perished be a blessing, and their soul should shine like the light of the firmament. Thanks to Jason Lefkowitz, our producer, and thank you all for joining us here today at the Anshei Sfarad Bethel Emeth Congregation here in Memphis, Tennessee. Thank you.